Welcome to Eat, Capture, Share, the podcast for food bloggers, food lovers, and everyone in between. My name is Kimberly. I'm your host. Episode 52. It's season 5 of the Eat, Capture, Share podcast, and I dare say this may be the best season yet. I have recorded some episodes already and I've got all my guests lined up. Super excited to bring you this season. For those of you who are new, my name is Kimberly Espinel. I'm the food photographer and food blogger behind the Little Plantation podcaster here at Eat, Capture, Share. And Eat, Capture, Share is also the name of my Instagram food photography challenge. Right, so what have I got in store for you this season? We're going to be talking about lots of different things, food photography, styling, also digging deeper into social media and how it's impacting us, creativity, so much goodness. And today we're starting off with a total bang. I've got a wonderful, wonderful guest, Sarah Copeland, who is known on Instagram as Edible Living. She has written 4 incredible cookbooks, standout cookbooks, with her latest being Instant Family Meals. And I have to say, I love speaking to all my guests. Like, I love all my guests. I handpick them because I really love their work. I love what they do. And Sarah's no exception. But I have to say, this conversation, I really, really enjoyed. Like, I could have spoken to Sarah for another hour easily. We geek out about writing good recipes, what it takes, how to distinguish your cookbook from everyone else's, what it really means to write a cookbook that stands the test of time. We delve deep into topics around creativity and managing family life with working in the fields of food photography, styling, recipe development. Sarah talks about what it was like working for Oprah and how she landed a TV show where she gets to do what she loves, namely cooking and spending time with her family. So this is a really, really lovely, bubbly, energizing, and just fun conversation with lots of practical takeaways too, especially for those of you who are thinking about creating and writing a cookbook. So grab a cuppa, maybe a little cookie or something, and enjoy. I'm really looking forward to our chat. I just cannot wait to dig deeper and, you know, talk all things food with you. But let's start at the beginning, which is introductions.
Okay, well, I'm Sarah Copeland. I am the author of Every Day is Saturday and Instant Family Meals, as well as 2 other books, Feast and the Newlywed Cookbook, which are my 2 older books. Mm-hmm. I'm a mother. I have 2 small children. I live in upstate New York, and I wear, like you, wear many hats, photographer, writer, author, etc. And I'm so excited to be here with you.
Likewise, I'm really looking forward to this conversation. Sarah, did you leave college thinking that you were going to work in food, or how did it all come about?
No, not at all. In fact, I'm from a really food loving family. We always appreciated and loved and cooked together, but I never even really considered food as a career choice. I studied journalism and photography in college. I was previously a pre-med major. So I was all things, you know, I really liked people and storytelling and working directly with people. And so, you know, writing was one way to do that, and photography was one way to do that. But when I came to New York after journalism school, my mind was blown wide open to the food scene and just what food can be in terms of art and culture. And especially when I started meeting food photographers, I was working in magazines with my journalism degree. And when I started meeting food photographers, then there was just this big open door to me, you know, food photography and food styling and everything related to making, you know, capturing these beautiful meals we make. And then instead of them disappearing off the plate and into our stomach, having something else besides just that, which is the photo. Mm-hmm. So that's really what drew me in.
Amazing. And then from working in magazines. How did you then transition into writing cookbooks? Because that's quite a big jump.
Yeah, that's true. It is. So I was working in magazines all throughout my 20s. I kind of dipped in and out, sometimes as a staffer, sometimes as a freelancer. I worked at a lot of magazines, some that were food magazines and some that were women's interest magazines. So everything from Savour magazine to I did some freelancing at Food and Wine. I did a lot of work at, my first job was at Glamour magazine. And then the real job that really was a turning point for me was Oprah magazine. I worked at Oprah magazine and she was just such a phenomenal leader in every way. And she let all of the editors deep dive into these topics and everything we did, whether it was covering home or fashion or emotional issues or food, we got to do it to the nines, you know, because she would back us. So I started working with food photographers and food stylists, and I started freelancing and assisting those people on the other side. And so I was just always dabbling. How I made the actual leap is I really wanted to invest in myself. My older sister is a business person, mm-hmm. and she always said, invest in yourself, invest in your business. And when you're creative, it can be hard to make sure you do that. And mm-hmm. and how do you do that in a way that's not just your daily investment of creating? So I went to a food writer's workshop. I went to the Greenbrier food writer's workshop.
Amazing.
In my late 20s, I was just married and I was writing and, like I said, freelancing for so many people, but I met an editor there and he said, I really love the way you write about how you love cooking for your husband. It's really charming. And I was like, you know, well, that's what's happening in my life right now. I just got married and my husband's Hungarian and I'm American. And so the way we come together with food is always very interesting. And he's also an athlete. And I'm, you know, food is like fuel for him. And I'm really will happily labor over like one beautiful salad. And, you know, he just needs a lot of calories. So it was fun to write about the way I saw food through our new little family. And this editor just picked up on that. And he said, you know, we actually want to write a newlywed cookbook. Would you be interested? And at the time I thought that's not what I was picturing for my first book, but he's right. I mean, I am passionate about this topic and I am passionate about cooking for and with the ones you love. In my case, my husband, but it could be your partner, your roommate, your, you know, anyone. Mm-hmm. And it was just a really fun time. It's not what I imagined my first book would be, but it was such a fun first book to write. And then mm-hmm. from there, you know, once I was on that book writing experience, I just loved it. I love the time and the space it gives you, especially mm-hmm. in our super fast paced internet world.
Yes. I mean, this is so interesting actually, because I think a lot of people dream of writing books. And then I often see, and I mean, I've experienced this myself, and the reality of it is quite lonely and quite intense. And did you find that, or did you just find joy in the process?
Oh, I love this question, Kimberly. It's such a good question. It's both for me. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm a social introvert. I love to be with people, but being quiet and introspective and working on a long-term project really fuels me. Yeah. Fast-paced deadlines have always been a bit overwhelming for me. And when I work in teams, fast-paced deadlines are fun because it's bursts of energy. You know, like when I was the food director at Real Simple was the last magazine staff job I had. And that was fun because we were a team of six and we could produce incredible things really quickly and it would still be top-notch. Mm-hmm. But for me, the act of book writing and photography for books versus for a blog or for Instagram, you have the time to step back. And especially when you're working alone, you need that time mm-hmm. to step back and really make sure it's coming from the heart, that you're doing something that's distinctly you mm-hmm. and that you're not rushing the process of creativity. That's so important to me. So for me, book writing is mostly a joy, but I have to say, I'm lucky to live in such a community. I mean, in New York City and now where I am outside of New York City, there's still a ton of creatives. So I get my creative collaboration fuels fired by my friendships and even really tapping into those folks for, you know, dear friends and my children's friends for come be a part of this shoot. Come, you know, come be the people in my shoot. Like I try to make sure everything I'm shooting is real and real life. And therefore, I'm never just making something for a photograph and then, you know, packing it up. Yes. There's always going to be on the other side of the photo, there's always going to be whether it's my two kids, my family, my neighbors, or a big crowd of people, sitting down and eating whatever you see in the photo immediately afterwards. And I think that keeps it really real.
Yes, I think that's a good word. And also really varied. Like you sometimes have, you know, your waffles and then soups and salads, and there's, you know, a little bit of everything there in your feed. Sarah, I would love to know, as you mentioned before, you've just actually published your fourth cookbook, and I would love to get a sense of where you get your ideas from. Do you have another book in you? How do you keep it fresh? How do you stay inspired? And what is the process for you?
That's so fun. You know, I'm laughing. I'm smiling. I don't know if you can hear the smile because I just last night, my fourth book is called Instant Family Meals, and it just came out 2 weeks ago. And this was kind of a surprise project. I actually had already entered my proposal for my fourth book, another idea, to my publisher that I've been working with for years and years, Chronicle. And this book idea, the fourth one that's out now, Instant Family Meals, is with Clarkson Potter. And they came to me with this idea. And I'm so happy I did it. I love this book. I'm super proud of it. And it pushed me into new directions. But I definitely have another book in me. And in fact, last night I was flipping through a magazine that I never even look at, a design magazine. And the typography in that book, in this article, was so electric and so alive that immediately I thought, this is what I want my fifth book to look like. Mm. And that, so a moment like that can be just enough for me to sit down at my computer and power through, you know, 5 hours straight of proposal writing or tweaking or writing out the first 10 pages. And that kind of momentum for me is just so essential. If you sit around on an idea for too long, or if you let it get diffused by consuming too much of other people's ideas, then I think the electricity is gone. And so when I have that kind of a moment and I notice it, then I have to act immediately on it.
I love that. And then in terms of recipes, how do you develop a recipe? And as I asked before, like, how do you keep it fresh and ensure that you're not doing another chocolate chip cookie recipe, right? Or if you are, that it's a little bit different. Like, how do you stay inspired in that sense?
That's such a good question. And it's such an important question now because the market is so saturated. Yes. You know, there's millions of every kind of recipe out there. Well, I'm a bit old school in that sense that, you know, I went to culinary school, I came out and I worked for some pretty exacting and demanding both chefs and pastry chefs, and then also authors and recipe developers in test kitchens, from the Food Network to Martha Stewart to, you know, worked with some good housekeeping folks. I mean, people who have been doing this for years and years, mm-hmm. you know, gourmet, certainly the people who were writing gourmet in the early days, just really, really meticulous. And when I used to develop a recipe, let's say a cookie or a cake, I would look at 5 or 6 authors I trusted. And then I would make these charts to see what does their butter cake have in common with each other? Oh, well, they all have, you know, flour, butter, et cetera, et cetera, and the things we know. But then I would also look deeper to say, like, oh, that's interesting. I wonder why she used, you know, baking powder instead of baking soda, or why their ratios are so different. In the old days, when I had more time and when I often was on a bigger team and a staff, sometimes we would bake like 8 or 10 cakes, taste them next to each other, and then walk away with our favorite textures mm-hmm. and our favorite details, and then start from scratch with that as the inspiration. But that's super luxurious. That's talking about having, you know, 2 weeks to perfect something, which is just not the case anymore with the way, you know, the consumption rate of the American public, or the global public, who just loves new and yes. beautiful and luscious and layered, and, you know, just the demands are pretty high for us now. I'm sure you would agree, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
For creators. So these days I try to not look to others really, and to more have it come organically from our life and from a really deep place within me, which I can say as someone who's been doing this for 15 years, you know, there's certain things you just know at one point. Like, I'm big on egg yolks. It is annoying to have 2 egg whites sitting around perhaps, but sometimes an extra egg yolk in a traditional butter cake is just what you need for that, like, richness and tenderness. And so knowing what my line is, being not afraid to break the rules, but also available to adhere enough to the rules that I don't alienate the audience. So what I mean by that is, you know, if I look at a recipe and it's like, oh, I have, there's all these weird, like half measures, like 2.5 tablespoons of butter. What is that? You know, it should be easy enough that people actually make it. The biggest compliment to me is having people use my books.
Yeah.
And a friend of mine who has worked at Martha Stewart for 15 years texted me a photo of her cooking from my new book, Instant Family Meals, last night. And she said, my kids love pressure cooker mom. And it's such a simple statement, but it's just to say, I'm using your book and my family's happy and I'm going back and back and back to it all week long. And that's the goal. As much as I love a beautiful photo, it has to be attainable and it has to be repeatable.
Yes. And I think you touched on something really interesting, you know, for me, and that I'm seeing so many food bloggers, so many Instagram personalities, so to say, bring out cookbooks. And some of them have been incredible. And then there's also a lot of people whose books, just the recipes don't work or they don't work so well. And, you know, I love this idea. The way you're speaking makes me realize that you really studied.
Right.
The art of cooking, you really understand, and you also understand the home cook, and you're able to really capture that. And I think that's what, I own two of your books. That's what makes your books so good, you know, and that's why they stand out. And I think stand the test of time. But
thank you for saying that. That means so much.
I hadn't realized, you know, now that you explain how you do, I'm like, yes, that's it. It's simple, achievable, but still lush. And that's because there's that knowledge and that training and that investment in yourself that you mentioned before behind it. So
I think that's really interesting, and we've lost that in our culture a bit. Like, one of my favorite things to do when I go to an art museum, when I travel, or when I'm in New York City, is to look at the birth date of the artist and then look at the date of the painting. And you will find that the great art and the great works that we love and admire are very often not from someone super young. You know, we improve and we improve and we improve. Yes. And it's interesting to be in an industry where there is a flood of new and young, and that's energizing and beautiful. And I'm really happy that young folks have access to create their own destiny and kind of manifest their visions. I think it's amazing to live in this time. And I'm excited for my own, you know, my own daughter who's 10 now, like what is possible for her. And then I also have a deep, deep, deep respect for people who have been doing this for a long time. Dory Greenspan, for example, is a perfect example of someone who entered the world quietly when there were just a few food experts back in the day, and just has steadfastly created and developed. And I remember very early on, and when I wrote my first book, The Newlywed Cookbook, I had a very deeply personal recipe in that book that I had written for my husband on our first like weekend getaway as a married couple. It was the weekend that I wrote my book proposal. I hunkered down at a friend's cabin and he had blackberries, and I went outside and I picked blackberries and I went in the kitchen and just was tinkering, and I made these phenomenal pancakes that we still make to this day. Mm-hmm. And that was the first recipe I wrote for that book. It was called Oatmeal Yogurt Pancakes with Blackberry Crush. And this was 10 years ago, and blogs were brand new, and Tumblr was brand new, and Instagram didn't even exist yet. And the amount of people who reblogged or reposted or pinned or put on their Tumblr page that recipe without attributing it to me was so astounding. It was a runaway train. Everything was oatmeal yogurt pancakes. And it was such a personal recipe, and it really hurt me that so many people weren't trained the way I was and didn't understand that this wasn't a hobby for me. This was my livelihood. I had invested many, many years in learning how to do this correctly and how to respect other people's recipes. And I talked to Dory about it, and she's been a great friend and a mentor. And she said, you know, she revealed that's happened to her many times, but she was so, you know, genteel in her way of saying, like, we as artists, we're always full of new, and we just have to take it as flattery, and it's not right and it's not okay, but take it as flattery and keep moving forward, because you are a well of beautiful creative energy, and it will never dry up. And I love that, because I go back to that a lot, because I'll see things on the cover of a book right now that I might have developed a recipe just like that 8 or 10 years ago. And so now it's a very popular book. So if I develop something similar now or revamp my own recipe, it looks like I might have borrowed from someone more recent. In fact, I'm borrowing from myself from 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so just knowing in your heart where your integrity lies and that you are just going about this with loving intentions and honesty and respect for our peers has just been so important to me. Mm-hmm. And I think you're right that I appreciate that you noticed that, but also that, you know, that there is just so much out there and you have to, as a consumer, you have to deep dive and say, I'm going to buy the book that where things are going to work and it's been tested and the expertise and the knowledge is there as well.
Yeah. How do you select recipes for your book? And yeah, I'm sure there's recipes that you cook maybe at home that don't make it into the book, or maybe all of them from at home do. Like how is that process for you? And also specifically maybe in relation to your latest book?
That's such a good question. Well, it's funny that a lot of my books do have my family's favorite recipes in them throughout the years. And that's always evolving, of course. You know, my husband's a vegetarian. My daughter used to love meat. And so after I wrote my second book, Feast, then we started, my daughter was, you know, 2 years old when that came out. But then she started really loving meat around age 2 or 3. So then there's more meat in my third book, Every Day is Saturday, just like big pulled pork, things that I would always, that she loved. And now she became a pescatarian. So, you know, things are always evolving as a family. I've been vegetarian and now I'm kind of more of an omnivore again, but we eat mostly plant forward. But for sure, I'm taking a lot from our real life. Mm-hmm. But also, I find that after the book comes out or around the time it comes out, I'm using my own book and then those things really get sealed even more. So for example, you know, for me, it's great to have a book that I know I can go to and everything works and I can just flip through and pull it out. And I, of course, take inspiration and use other people's books, but I do use my own books quite a bit at home because I know the recipes work. I know that my family loves them and they wouldn't have made it into the book if my family wasn't super excited to eat them repeatedly, mm-hmm. right? Because there are certain things that from every book, I have sort of an outtakes folder, you know, on my Google Drive that's things that I've tried and that I had on my original recipe list for a book. And that didn't make it because either after 3 or 4 tests, it wasn't spectacular or wasn't perfect and working well every time, or all of a sudden it felt like an outlier, like it didn't belong for some reason. And so sometimes those things make it into a future book. Like I had a homemade English muffin in my first book. And then I thought, you know, really only a handful of people are going to do that. Nowadays, everybody's making sourdough again. Yes. Anyone would be happy to have an English muffin recipe. But mm-hmm. 10 years ago when that book came out, I knew that it was such a small percentage of people that would repeatedly return to that recipe that it wasn't worth the space. Mm-hmm. My new book, Instant Family Meals, has a lot of foods that we ate when we lived in New York City, like tikka masala and borscht, for example. There was a wonderful Russian restaurant around the corner from my husband's work. And they serve the best borscht. And when we left the city, I needed to get really good at making it again at home. So a lot of these things are inspired by what I truly want to be eating right now. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, I make a list and then I'll make sure that it feels balanced, that there's enough. But I don't have a formula. I'm sure there are people who say, well, there's going to be 4 chicken recipes and 4 pork recipes and I'm not very formulaic, period, as a person. Mm-hmm. It really comes from instinct, I think, more than anything.
Amazing. I know, because I just looked at your website, that your very, very first book sold more than 200,000 copies, which is so, so much. I mean, that's incredible. And my first question is, why do you think that happened? And for anyone listening who's wanting to write a book or, you know, dreams of that and would like it to be a success, was there something that you learned from that success that you've carried on or something that made that happen?
Wow, I should think more on that. You know, I've never been asked a question anything like this. I love the way you pull details. It's amazing. So that book, I think part of the charm of that book is just sheer enthusiasm. I was just over the moon that my dream came true, that I got to write a book, which is what I always loved and wanted, that I, you know, was lucky enough to fall in love with someone from a different part of the world that I learned from every day, that a publisher trusted me to be in charge of the photos and the design and the prop styling and really lead my own vision. All of those things coming together, I think, presented a book with a lot of heart. There are things I do differently now. We live in a very different world than 10 years ago. It's very male-female marriage oriented. And I think it would be incredibly more inclusive now. And I don't have the opportunity to reprint it. So I think, you know, there are just things that are of a time. And I think it really connected with people because I so much came from the heart talking about whoever you choose to live your life with, to really love and nurture that relationship and that person. And one of the ways that I do that best is through food. And I think, you know, with my second book, frankly, it didn't sell nearly, I mean, to this day, hasn't even approached that. And it was a vegetarian book before its time, for sure. It was very, you still see things that are in my second book, Feast, that seem fresh when they come out, you know, on Bon Appetit or Epicurious or whatever. Meaning that, like, I was really deeply in the restaurant world there then, and things were more forefront and weren't mainstream enough when that book came out for that book to go mainstream. And I'm super proud of that book. And what I loved about that book was that my peers and the press really latched onto that book. That doesn't always translate to sales. Yeah. That meant that my peers respected who I was as a cook and a writer, and that, you know, the people who wrote for the James Beard Foundation Awards thought that it was a really notable book. Things like that felt good. And the kind of person that I am, and I think probably just any true creative, is driven by the feedback more than the dollars. But, you know, four books in, it's a lot of time. It's a lot of time. So you do want the book to sell, and you do want it to get in the hands of the people who need it. So what I'm excited about with the new book is that it's the timing is really good. And I think people need really wholesome, delicious, very nourishing, comforting food that's also healthy, and that's also quicker. And because we have technology of pressure cookers and multi-cookers and Instant Pots available, and I say in the front of my book, I was a real latecomer to that technology. I'm really, you know, I'm sort of a Laura Ingalls girl. Like, I would happily do everything on the Dutch oven and grow everything myself. And that time invested is really never at a loss to me. But when I look at what the world demands of busy parents, and especially now during COVID and during, you know, a time when everybody has to wear 10 hats, I think that it's appropriate and still beautiful and loving way to nourish your family to use that technology. It's not, you know, I think there would have been a time in my life where I thought that was a cheat, you know, that do it the old fashioned way. But now I don't. I believe that we all can use the help.
Absolutely. So, I mean, especially those of us who are still homeschooling and what have you. So absolutely.
Yes.
Also, Sarah, I hadn't realized that you did photography of course I can see your gorgeous photos on your feed, but I hadn't realized that you'd studied photography. And what intrigues me is that you had someone else do the photography both for Everyday Saturday and now also for your new book. And what made you decide to step away from doing the photography yourself? Sorry to be interrupting your podcast experience, but did you know that my book, Creative Food Photography, is now available for pre-order? Full of inspiring content, ideas for finding your style, up-leveling your food styling, and taking your composition to the next level. The book is released on January 7th, 2021. But if you pre-order today before its release date, you receive a free workbook that accompanies the book. You can find out more at thelittleplantation.co.uk/food-photography-book or find the link to all you need in the show notes. Thank you so much for your support. And now, to the podcast.
I think that I really love collaborating at that point when I've been at home for a year or sometimes 2 years writing my book myself. And, you know, I take test photos, of course, for my own records. And At that point, I've got my notepad out. I'm taking notes. I'm a secretary. I'm a chef. I'm a writer. I'm thinking like an author and an editor. I'm also a food stylist. And then I'm wearing the photographer hat. Mm. So adding, when I want it to come out on this really high, beautiful level for the finished product, I love bringing in a photographer. And I think that they push me in new ways each and every time. So I got to work with Gentle and Hires on Every Day is Saturday, and they are just phenomenal. I've loved their work for 20 years, and they are, you know, they've become friends, and they're just uber talented. And Christopher Testani, who shot Instant Family Meals, my new book, is just, he's so easy to work with. He's so creative. He's so flexible. And, you know, if we were making something, if we were shooting something and I had a vision in my head and I, you know, I did all the prop styling as well and the food styling. So if I had a vision and then I laid it out and we were like, it's not working, it could be very easy if it was just me to get stuck on my vision and press and press until I made it work. But he would say, you know what if we go really tight with this shot? Or what if we pull back? Or what if we, you know, we've been overhead almost the whole time. Let's go three quarters. And because it's another person saying it, I'm like, of course I want to respect their ideas and give them the benefit of the doubt. And more often than not, just stepping back from my vision, you know, on a shot where that's sticky, gives us something really beautiful. And I'm super proud of this book that we were able to make something that came out of an Instant Pot. We sincerely cooked the food in the Instant Pot to style this book. I didn't want to step away from that. I wanted it to be true. I wanted people to be able to accomplish. Of course, you know, someone who's been cooking for 2 decades and has been food styling will use the big gorgeous noodle, or know that you don't want to let your kale sit in that soup up a stew broth for too long before you shoot it. And so it's not always going to look exactly like that on your family dinner table, of course, but it's real and you can achieve this at home, which is super important to me.
Now, I love following you on Instagram and love your photos and especially your stories, but I would love to know how you feel your presence on social media has impacted your career, if at all. And yeah, I'd love your take on that.
You know, social media, I think when it started, I mean, I'm thinking specifically about Instagram because that's where I spend the most energy. It would be very easy, I think, to say, I mean, there are so many perils, obviously, but there are a lot of people who started later than I did or have less experience or less professional level experience than me that have huge audiences. And it would be very easy to just be discouraged by that. But I will say that I will only do social media as long as it's fun for me, as long as I'm enjoying it. I know that there is some toxicity for certain people, and there certainly has been moments where I've had to step away. But for me, it's still fun. It's still a place of engagement. And I think as my audience grows bigger, it's trickier. For some people, having a huge audience is the goal. My goal is always to stay really connected to the audience. So I like it when I see a lot of comments from people I actually know and or get to know, because they continue to come back. They're not just there for one-off, or they're not just there for a free recipe. They're there because they're invested, because I'm sharing a lot of personal stuff. I'm sharing my parenting journey.
Sarah, you know? This is so interesting because I feel I'm kind of in a really weird place, because for me, I would happily keep my influencer, my follower number just as it is. Like, I already feel it's a little bit too much. Like, I don't know everybody. Like, I love that kind of cozy, intimate feel. But at the same time, I do feel a pressure to continue to grow my audience for book sales, or, you know, to get noticed by a publisher. Or so how do you balance that? Like, how do you balance the desire to feel a connection with your audience versus needing to have the numbers to get another book deal or to sell the books or whatever it is?
Yeah. I mean, it's such a unique position, because people I work with, agencies or people who might earn a commission off of my work, their goal is for sure for me to grow, because the more I grow, the more they grow, the more their return is higher. I have just always been a person who will take quality of life over mm-hmm. accolades and success. My relationship with my children is so important to me, and mm-hmm. having time to help my neighbor, be invested in my community. I do a lot of work with Feed Foundation and our local charities here with Feeding the Hunger, Feeding the Hungry, which is these things have just been woven into my life based mm-hmm. on the way I was raised and from watching my own mother, who didn't have a career while her children were young. So that was a very different thing. I hold myself a bit to the standard of what she was able to do for the family, but she was home with us for, you know, the majority of our younger years until we were all in high school. But I will say, I think it's really a question of self, you know, to ask yourself, because I do think that big audiences for sure can produce bigger results in terms of book sales, mm-hmm. higher dollar numbers on your advances for your book sales. And also, for example, if you go on Amazon and you look at the best-selling books in any category that I've written in, if there's 6,000 reviews on a book and then you go to that person's social media account, they probably have hundreds of thousands of followers and loyal followers. And so, of course, all of those things feed each other. Yeah. And some people, I think, have that capacity. And I'm not saying that I don't have that capacity, but I know what my limit is right now while my children are young. Yeah. And it's different from what my limit was when I was in my early 20s or when I was new. In fact, if the Newlywed Cookbook had come out in the time of Instagram, I think I would be in a very different position, because I didn't have any children. I was pregnant, but I didn't have children yet. And I lived, slept, breathed my work. My husband was like, okay, I guess I better get some more hobbies, because, you know, we'd have dinner and then I'd be like, okay, I'm going to go work on that story. I'm going to go, you know, and everywhere we traveled to me was a story opportunity. Mm-hmm. I was just, you know, and I'm still really driven and I'm still very ambitious, but
it's balanced. It's right. More balanced with family. Yeah, I totally
I'm able to sort of put on my brakes a little bit, even though it's not my instinctual nature, but I can put on my brakes now because I see the effect of me being too busy, what that does to my family. And so I really try to wear that balance. But Kimberly, I will say, I do think that there are books that are really good and strong that will sell for many years and may not feel like they have the impact of someone with a huge following right out of the gate, because you don't feel like the earthquake vibration rippling across the whole of social media. But I do think that there are these books that have longevity, and mm-hmm. there's really a lot of value in that too.
Yeah. I love that. And I genuinely mean this. I really feel that your books have that. Like every day, yeah, I really feel that. I think every day Saturday, if someone picks it up in a year's time, it will still feel fresh.
I hope so. Yeah. I hope so. I think when your work comes from your real life, as yours does, you know, and when you really feel that on the other side, that there's a real person there. You know I'm drawn to people who show vulnerability. I'm not very good at that. I don't really show like my struggles because of my photography background, my eye just craves beauty. And so there is that critical place where some people don't use these platforms for beauty. They use them for storytelling. And I mean, truth telling as a trained journalist is very important to me. So I don't feel that I'm not telling the truth. I just feel I'm telling you the most beautiful parts that I want. But I am also really drawn to people who share a lot of vulnerability.
Yes.
And I think there's room for all of it. And it's about finding your own comfort zone. But certainly there are people who dream of this path and that have either the resources or the energy to just go after it big. I say go after it big if you have that energy. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's beautiful. I love it. I'm very quick to cheer on everybody else's growth and success, even if I intentionally grow slowly, because that works for me and my family.
Yeah. Speaking of which, and maybe this is also why I'm so drawn to your Instagram, and especially your Instagram stories, because like you, I feel my Instagram is honest, but it's also prettified, because I just love pretty things,
you know,
beautiful things. And when I look at your Instagram stories, it's just so beautiful. Where you live is like a dream. It's your home is like a dream. What you cook is like a dream.
Thank you so much.
It's true that I'd love to know how you think about your Instagram stories. Are you quote unquote strategic about it, or is it just kind of spur of the moment? How do you craft your Instagram stories?
You know, I think it used to be very, very spur of the moment. It's still spur of the moment for sure. But I used to share a lot more on Instagram stories. I was thinking the other day about the fact that my husband's from Hungary, I mentioned, and his family, we still go to see them every August. We did not go this year because of the pandemic, but we usually spend about a month over there every summer. And I remember that Instagram stories was brand new when one summer when we were about to leave for Hungary. And I remember thinking, huh, this will be so interesting because I'll be in a different time zone. And I just got really inspired and I shared a lot. And, you know, it's this part of the world and this place we go to that's like almost unbelievable. It's so fairy tale. It's so old world. And it still really stays in that old world because it's in a remote part of Hungary that you can't get to accidentally. You have to know where you're going. Mm. And I remember thinking like, you know, just share it all because you just don't know when you have a chance to share these things again. And nowadays I'll take some Instagram stories. I'll take some videos thinking that like after the kids go to bed, I'll post them up and I'm just too tired. And so there's a lot more that I would love to share and that I enjoy sharing and capturing that at the end of the day, sometimes I'll say, I did this last night. I wanted to reshare so many generous people who were sharing about my book and who've been texting me and DMing me and it's cooking from my book. And I just had to say, like, I'm super behind on sleep. I really need to prioritize going to sleep tonight. And then tomorrow I'll jump back in. Instagram stories for me as a consumer is like TV. I don't watch hardly any TV shows. So I love Instagram stories almost more than the still platform. I love to see what people are just doing, like, every little day, you know. And, you know, I mean, there are definitely parts of my life that you'll never see on Instagram stories, like piles of laundry and things that exist. because I'm usually taking a lot of photos and sharing when I'm super happy and blissing out on, you know, gratitude for my environment or my home or my children or any of that. And then I'm like, share, you know? and frankly, if I'm not on Instagram a lot, it means I'm super tired and overwhelmed.
I know that you've got a TV show that is, if I understood correctly, linked to the new book. Is that right?
My show is linked to Every Day is Saturday. So it's called Every Day is Saturday and it's with Food Network on the Food Network cooking app. So you have to have the app to see it currently. We're hoping obviously to grow it to something bigger, but right now you can only watch it via the app, which you can watch on, you know, on an Alexa device or on your telephone or on your computer or on your TV screen, but you have to have that gotcha. Food Network Kitchens app.
But Sarah, still, like, you've got a TV show. I don't care if it's on an app or not on an app. So how did that come about?
That is such a beautiful story. I have a friend, Chris Vivian. We went to college together, at the same time, and we didn't even know each other in college, but one of my dearest college friends, when I was working at Food Network, I worked at Food Network for about 7 years on staff. And then I left to write my first book because I had to make a choice to either stay on staff or if I wanted to write a book. At the time, you know, people weren't really promoting from within, like their inner talent within staffs. It was just like, you know, you're either here to support the brand or you're going to go off and do your own brand. So I decided to go off and do my own brand and write my book. And shortly after that, this mutual friend, Chris Vivian, went to work at the Food Network. So I had Food Network experience, he had Food Network experience, and then here we are many years later, both doing our own thing. He has a production company, and you all know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And he said to me, you know, I think there's really a show in your life upstate, in upstate New York, in the Catskills, and I think we should just try it. I think we should just capture it. And I kept saying, you know, don't you think if I was meant to have a show, it would have happened by now? I've worked at so many networks. I've done a lot of, you know, live TV and morning shows, and I've had a lot of takes at trying TV. And he said, no, I don't think if it was meant to happen, it would have happened by now. I think if you want it to happen, you have to go after it. And I mean, I work very, very hard, but I've also been fortunate in that a lot of the things that have happened have been an open door that I peeked through and then walked through and ran through. And so I thought that I only wanted it if it came super organically, like I'm not trying too hard to get it, mm-hmm. because I wasn't really even sure I wanted to do TV. Mm-hmm. So he said, why don't I just come up and shoot 2 days of fly in the wall, observing your life with your kids, make 6 recipes from your new book, which at the time that was last summer, mm-hmm. I had just come out with Every Day is Saturday and I had just come home from book tour and I was, you know, high on life and had this wonderful, incredible reception all over the United States. And I came home and he came for 2 days to my backyard and just shot me cooking my recipes from the book for my own family. And it was so much fun. We had the best 2 days. It was so beautiful. He really understood my relationship with my family and our land and our little home and our yard and my husband's workshop, which is in the barn right outside of the house. He really understood it, the like symbiosis that we've worked super hard on over the last 10 years. So he really saw that and he came in and captured it in such a beautiful way. And he's such a phenomenal editor. And then he took it to the Food Network and said, we want to do this show with you. And they bought it. So we just finished shooting season 2 in October. It was probably the best 10 days of 2020 for me, for sure. Mm-hmm. I was saying to my husband last night, you know, I resisted TV for so long thinking that it meant not being yourself or that it meant, you know, just having to show up and be like fake bubbly on TV and, yeah. you know, things that I've always like kind of the cheese factor that has always not been my thing. And Chris is able to capture the real us and the real mm-hmm. family life and the vibe and it's just so beautiful what he really sees us for who we are and what we have to offer the world. And so it was just 10 days of feeling totally at home in my skin and having mm-hmm. him capture it. And that's really special. I feel like that's what I'm excited to offer the world. And I hope that they love it, you know?
Well, that's so lovely. It's such a nice way how that all came about. And it sounds like it came about in the right way for you. So
right, and the right time for sure. Yes, yes. Especially because my kids are you know, they're a big part of my spark now. Mm-hmm. You know, they definitely keep me on my toes. They're constantly teasing me, you know, and they keep me from taking anything too seriously.
Love it. Sarah, before I let you go, I have one more question. And that's a question I ask everybody who comes onto the podcast. I'd love to know what your most favorite thing to eat, what your most favorite thing to capture, and what your most favorite thing to share is.
Oh, wonderful. Okay. It doesn't have to be the same thing, right?
No.
Okay. I mean, I think my favorite thing to eat is I didn't premeditate this, but what's coming to my head right now is something my mom made for me. You know, like she makes her lasagna or she makes her mashed potatoes. If I make it, I'm not going to lie. It's going to be a little bit more delicious. It's going to be a little bit more, you know, practice. It's going to have like French cuisine techniques behind it. You know, the way I make my mashed potatoes or my lasagna is a little more layered, but the way she makes it is just so nourishing and so full of love. And I especially love it because she doesn't love to cook the way I do. And so I know that she's doing it as an act of sacrifice. Mm-hmm. So when I'm cooking for my family, it's an act of love, but it's also selfish because I absolutely love it. I love being in the kitchen. It's mm-hmm. my creative space and it's fun and easy for me. So I'm not doing something that I'm just doing for them. I'm doing yeah. it for them and I'm doing it for me.
Gotcha.
And my favorite thing to capture with my camera, I love shooting salads. I like movement. Baked goods I love to bake so much, but they're really hard for me to shoot. Your baked goods are, the way you shoot baked goods is so beautiful. It's hard for me to shoot anything that's really still, like an already baked item that's not gonna like pick up a reflective light.
But you know, that's anything. That's so interesting because most people would say that salads are one of the hardest things to photograph.
Yeah, but I love it because it's, you know, there's like the swoops and textures of the leaves and herbs and glistening olive oil and a meaty olive. I mean, I like when there's a lot of texture to work with. Mm-hmm. That's kind of my go-to.
Love it.
And my favorite thing to share, I think, stories about motherhood. Mm-hmm. I love writing. As much as I love writing recipes and taking photos, at my very core, I'm a writer. And I think mm-hmm. I will always do that till my last breath. And I love it when I can share it and it resonates with even one or two people, especially a mother who might be, you know, feeling lonely or feeling discouraged. And just if it can pick somebody up and give them a moment to themselves to really feel heard and seen, that to me is everything.
Amazing. Sarah, if people want to find you, if they want to order your book, where can they go?
My books are everywhere books are sold, on Amazon, of course. They're on super sale right now, but also local booksellers. And if you go to edibleliving.com, that's my website, and the very first page shows you all the places you can buy the book. And on Instagram, I'm at Edible Living, and on Pinterest, I'm also at Edible Living. And those are my two main places to play and engage. So I'd love to see you all there.
Great. Thank you so much for your time, Sarah.
Thank you, Kimberly, for having me. It was such a great conversation, and I'd love to continue it again.
Is it just me, or is Sarah's passion and enthusiasm for recipe development, food, and cookbook writing totally contagious? Like, I'm already thinking about writing a cookbook, and it's actually totally not on my horizon, but there you go. I would really recommend you check out Sarah's gorgeous Instagram feed at Edible Living and follow her, and make sure that you watch her Instagram stories. They are, as I mentioned, hands down amongst my most favorite on the platform. Also, if you do follow along and check out her work and are enjoying it, make sure that you let her know that you listened to this podcast episode. I know that guests love hearing from listeners. It really, really makes their day. Also, another quick reminder that my book, Creative Food Photography, is available for pre-order. And if you like this show, if you want to support my work, and if you want to up-level your food photography, be sure to check it out. The link to pre-order my book and the link to everything and anything else mentioned in today's podcast episode, including Sarah's social channels and all her books, are in the show notes. I will be back with another episode, same time, same place, next week, and I can't wait to connect with you then. See you then. Before I leave you, I wanted to say thank you so, so much for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. I also wanted to let you know that this podcast was brought to you by my free creative community, the Eat, Capture, Share Creative Community on Facebook, formerly known as the Food Photo Insta Creative Community, and I'd love for you to join. I will pop the details on how you can join my creative community in the show notes, so do go and check it out. Also, if you enjoy the podcast, it means so much if you can rate, review, and subscribe. All those things will help the podcast to grow and to reach the right audience. And yeah, you'd kind of make my day. All right, see you soon. Take care. Bye.